1016 here, Portland Sports Leader. Don't you forget it, baby. We are live from the shadows of the historic Fremont Bridge. It's 503-864-6326 kind of day. That's a text line. She'll let you interact with us throughout the entire day. There's also the YouTubes out there. 105.1 The Fan is the channel. Smash that like, subscribe button, jump in the chat. It's a Friday, so let's be chill, y'all. Let's be chill. On the text line, are you guys the firm of Harris or Meringue at this point? That's a fair point. That's a fair shot. I get it.
Step into a Slim Jim.
Danny will be back on Thursday, next Thursday. So we'll have Thursday, Friday, and I believe I only have one more day on the books. It's a one day. And then you get us for the rest of your lives. For the rest of your lives.
Take over,
Monty. I'm in the bag. CBS Sports has put up their top 150 player rankings. It's Football Friday, so let's get right to it, okay? Let's have a little bit of fun with this. Is there any player in college football, Casey, and I ask you listeners out there as well, you can text in your thoughts, is there any real argument for any player being the best player in college football than Jeremiah Smith?
I can't think of one either.
While I do know that there are a bunch of quarterbacks that are going to have some nice seasons this year and are going to be touted, and I would be surprised if a quarterback didn't win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, but just if I go by just breaking down who's the best player at their position, bar none, no contest, who stands above everybody else, well, it's Jeremiah Smith. And so I feel like that's just the easy place to put him.
Right, exactly. And let's take the wide receiver room, for example, okay? Malachi Toney sits the list at number 4. Definitely had an amazing inaugural season last year. Awesome in the playoff. A very, very good player that we expect to be even better around him. Dare I say, Darian Mensa might be a better quarterback than Carson Beck. So if that's the case, then he could blow up. But I'm not taking Malachi Toney over Jeremiah Smith.
Nope.
If you want to look at the quarterbacks on this list, okay? Let's just look at the top 10. There's a few quarterbacks in here. Number 2 overall is Dante Moore. Number 3 overall is Trinidad Chambliss, the second quarterback on this list. Then you get to Arch at 9 and Mestemaker at 10. Let's just, for the sake of argument, we can get into these quarterbacks for a moment. This list has Dante Moore as the top quarterback. Is Dante better than Jeremiah Smith?
No.
I don't think so either. And it's not a shot at Dante.
It's not a shot at Dante. It's just, again, if I go back to who was just bar none the best player at their position, I can't think of, again, if the drop-off from Jeremiah Smith is to Malachi Toney, well, Malachi Toney is a really great receiver and a really great athlete. But Jeremiah Smith is the best true receiver in this college football landscape right now.
Without a doubt. If you held the NFL draft right now, would he go first? Or would the quarterback still jump it?
The quarterback's going to jump it because of just the value of the quarterback position. But Jeremiah Smith is going to be the first talent non-quarterback taken off the board.
Let's see. Let's stick in this quarterback world, though. You go a long way until you reach another wide receiver. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm still scrolling. It's Cam Coleman from Texas at 12. Okay? But around him is a lot of quarterbacks, okay? As I said, Dante 2, Trinidad Chambliss 3, Arch 4, Drew Mestemaker 5, Jane Maiava 11, or sorry, Mestemaker 10, Jane Maiava 11.
I feel like we're
Mensa
missing a
13.
Name.
What's that?
I feel like we're missing a name.
Who?
I feel like we're missing Jeremiah Smith's quarterback.
Julian Sain?
I'm pretty high on Julian Sain this year.
CJ Carr made the list at 18, Julian Sain at 19. Now, the quarterbacks are weird because
is Julian Sain that far worse than Arch Manning in people's eyes?
I don't think so. I think Julian Sain has a lot of hype coming around him this year. I don't get it. He's not my Huckleberry.
Not my Huckleberry as well, but you can't deny that guy completed a great amount of his passes and mm-hmm. was a great game creator towards the end of the season last year. That confuses me that Arch Manning would be at 9. But Julian Sain is all the way back at 22, you said?
He's 19.
19.
Yeah, and CJ Carr at 18. I'm actually really high on CJ Carr this year. The most interesting one on all of this has to be Drew Mestemaker. You're putting Drew Mestemaker at number 10?
Yeah.
We went through the Oklahoma State schedule yesterday with Stevie Fire, And we're looking at what? 6.5 wins, the over-under? And I think we all landed on 6. Some of us on 5.
Mm-hmm.
Can you win 5 games and have a top 10 player in college football?
Be really difficult to do. I'm trying to think of any program that's been that bad and still been able to churn out a quarterback.
Now, I know RG3 and Lamar.
RG3 won games at Baylor.
Yeah, but they didn't. I think he won 9 games his Heisman year. And I think Lamar is the same way at Louisville when he won his. So you can win, but you can't be 500.
So RG3 was, in his true freshman year, went 4-8. Went 2-1 before tearing his ACL. Then he went 7-6 his redshirt sophomore year. And his Heisman Trophy season, he went 10-3 and won in the Alamo Bowl.
So he went 9-3 and then won a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do it. But who has ever been 6-6, 6-5, and gotten that kind of swag?
Yeah, I can't think of one.
Now, it's definitely a better place for him at Oklahoma State than North Texas would have been, so I'm happy about that. But maybe the Arch Manning sitting at number 9, maybe that's the good thing for him. Maybe that is good for him to be sitting back behind a Trinidad Chambliss, a Dante Moore. Because going into last season, Arch Manning had all this pressure, all this hype, guilty as charged. I hook, line, sinkered into it, and I was eating the Arch Manning Kool-Aid. And he got knocked down pretty good, but he played pretty well at the end of the year. Is Arch Manning the one that's kind of flying under the radar here?
I think it's a little bit.
Because the other argument you can make
is, I think just putting him on this list high up is like, oh, okay, so he's the name that people want to see high up on this list. But I don't think he quite deserves to be up in the top 10 quite yet.
And as the text line saying, typical Manning overhype. And we'll see. It was definitely true last year. But at the end of the year, there weren't many quarterbacks playing better than Arch last year.
Yeah, he was great at the end of the season last year.
Now, if you want to find a quarterback on this list that's probably getting the most overlooked on all of that, I mean, I hate to say it because he's not here right now, but it's probably Jaden Maiava. Fight on.
Yeah, it's probably the dude who had 2 receivers get drafted this year, and, well, he threw for over 3,700 yards and 24 touchdowns, led the Big Ten in passing yards. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. And USC's never had an issue with wide receivers. Now, can their defense do anything? Is Lincoln Riley a good coach? That remains to be seen a little bit. But we do know that Lincoln Riley's great with quarterbacks. And is Jaden Maiava the one that's going to pop? Now, I'm the CJ Carr guy. That's my guy this year. Although I do think Dante is the best quarterback of all these. If I had to choose any of them to run my team this year, I am probably taking Dante Moore. I mean, I would love an Oregon-Notre Dame national championship. I think that would be fascinating. CJ Carr's a nice one, too. You asked the question, when do we see defensive players? Number 5, Leonard Moore, the corner out of Notre Dame. That Notre Dame defense is going to be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Simmons, the edge out of Texas at number 6. You get your first O lineman, Jordan Seaton, out of LSU. That's their tackle. Here's your first running back, is Kawan Lacy. Now, that's what's so interesting about this Ole Miss squad. Okay, you're going to give me Trinidad Chambliss. You're going to give me Kawan Lacy. That's a nice one, too. Who are you throwing the ball to? Is this a lane does magic there and Pete Golden can't keep it going? Or does Pete Golden keep it going? I don't know that. And that's why, dare I say this college season may be the most up-in-the-air college season I've ever seen.
Well, they have a few wide receivers that do make this list. I have Deuce Alexander. He's a talented outside wide receiver who can make plays at every level of the field. Nearly half of his 44 receptions were produced explosive gains. He comes in at 103 on the list. Searching. Yeah, he's the only other Ole Miss talent that's on the list.
That's crazy, man. I feel bad for that program, too, because that program was really building something nice. I actually thought Lane was going to stick around for a little bit. And now they're kind of living in a world of a very much unknown. And if they fall backwards this year in college football, they might not get back up. You know, there are squads that can fall down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon could take a backseat. Notre Dame could take a backseat. Alabama is taking a backseat. we can see those teams come back and still be
LSU
good.
LSU take a backseat under Brian Kelly.
Yep. But we expect them to come back. Ole Miss scares me. Like, if they take a backseat this year, I don't know what they're going to have to do to come out of it. I don't know if Pete Golding's the guy. We'll see.
I just think they're loaded up with talent. I mean, again, the fact that you have Trinidad Chambliss and Kawan Lacy in a backfield, that's going to be very difficult for teams to figure out and scheme against. That's a little bit of a nightmare.
If
you can evolve the receiving core and give Trinidad Chambliss a true number one target, that'll be pretty dangerous.
If you're curious where any of your other Oregon Ducks land on this list, Amari Washington at 22. Let's see here. De'Aaron Hill at 30. It's a nice little bump there for De'Aaron Hill. Brandon Finney at 36. Now, Brandon Finney, if Leonard Moore doesn't exist, Brandon Finney's probably your top corner in the nation.
Yeah, I'm very surprised to see him, probably just because he's super young. And again, it's the second year of college football, and he'll probably have to come back for another one. So
they know he'll be number one corner next year.
I think that's probably where the jump will be.
Let's see here if I can find anybody else. DeCorian Moore at 51.
Got Jamari Johnson at 64.
There's Jamari Johnson at 64.
Tatum Tuioti at 77.
And I'll bet you this back end of this list is littered with Oregon players, right? Just because that defense is so good, returning so many starters. Scrolling. That might be it.
Mateo Uiagalelei at 125. Coy Parrish at 137.
Preseason All-American Coy Parrish. Coy Pond at 137, but he's a preseason All-American. Does that tell me that safety is not a very deep class this year?
Well, except that there's a guy that's in the top 15 that from the safety positions, the guy from LSU, I believe. I'm sorry, he is trying to find the first safety on the list. I thought it was in the top 10, but I could be wrong here. Come back to me.
Okay. That's it. That's kind of it. That's all I got. I just wanted to look through this and kind of take a peek and see what's going on.
Leonard Moore out of Notre Dame. He's the first corner at number 5.
Oh, yeah. He's the first corner at 5. Yeah, Leonard Moore. Here's Dante. Look, I love Dante. I think Dante's going to have a great year. 72.5% of his passes in 2025, 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns. I bet she throws closer to 4,000 yards this year.
Just can the receiving corps stay healthy? Mm-hmm. I think that's my biggest woe against Oregon right now is can that receiving corps stay healthy and – how are we going to see Dante distribute the ball with the new offensive coordinator?
Yeah, and what kind of step does Dante need to take? You know what I mean? Because I don't think his decision-making is all that terrible. Just, can you become elite? Can you show me that you're the number one overall pick in the draft? I think that's all people really want to see, is do you have that in you? I think he does, but it'll be fascinating to see how other players perform. I know, like I said, I was big on CJ Carr. I just think he's got a lot of promise to him. He's not there yet by any means. 66% of his passes, 2,700 yards, 24 touchdowns. He looks to be the part. And maybe that's why I like him more than Julian Sain. Julian Sain's on a better team. Was last year.
Again, Ohio State's going to continuously churn out top-level talent.
Without a doubt.
So could Julian Sain just not lose games? I think that's my biggest thing is we saw – I don't want to say we saw Dante Moore lose games. We didn't see Dante Moore outwardly win a lot of important games. I think that's what I want to see.
He had the one throw against Penn State, which was money. Mm-hmm. And that's the step Julian Sain's probably going to have to take. You're right. I don't think Julian Sain really cost them any games, but he definitely didn't win them any games.
Yep.
Can he win them games? That'll be a big thing. If you've seen enough of this guy, then buckle up because you're about to see a whole lot more. That's Casey over there with sports. A lot to get to here on a Football Friday. Make fun of some dead people here in a moment. They're not actually dead, but something might die, and it probably should die. A lot to get to in the 11 o'clock hour as well. Brian Dunseth, MLS Apple TV, will join us. Preview the Timbers game against LAFC this weekend, which you can hear right here on the Fan Sports Network. The Big Nooner, Casey and I have our attire for the famous meringue wedding that will be on Sunday. So you'll want to tune in for that. Casey, do you consume the Manning cast for Monday Night Football?
Partially. It depends on who's playing. If it's a good quarterback matchup, then I usually like to turn on the Manning Cavs. Other than that, I don't like to hear them say that, oh, this guy should have done this, this guy should have done that. I try to stay with the regular broadcast.
Find like they're a bunch of haters? A
little bit.
Bunch of haters. Well, when they are not going to be about it, because I'm sure they have some scheduling conflicts and stuff, the Monday Night Altcast for Pat McAfee will be going on there. Now, I understand Pat McAfee is the cash cow over at the Four Letter right now, so I completely understand them wanting to shove him down our throat. But are we interested? I don't consume his show enough at all. In fact, it's on during this show, so Danny sometimes watches it, so I see it over my shoulder, but I rarely ever watch it. I'm watching Mark DeRosa break down a swing right now, which I don't know if that's credible either, but I'm watching that. I don't know if McAfee's the guy I really love talking to me about NFL. He's my college bro.
I live in both camps. I think I love him for the NFL because he brings on Schefter. He brings on Rappaport. Mm-hmm. AJ Hawk gives great insight. My quarterback goes on there every other week, it seems, so I feel like I have to listen.
Well, he's got an agenda.
Yeah, that I worry about. I don't necessarily have an issue with him in doing one or the other. I just think if you can keep churning out the football content, again, NFL is king and football is king, so we're just going to keep pushing as much football content on people as we possibly can.
Now, what I will say about Pat McAfee, for all the people over the years that have been shoved down our throats, McAfee is the least egregious for me.
He's the most digestible, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, he's definitely bro-y, a lot more bro-y than I am. So I'm a little surprised that I enjoy him as much as I do, but I think he's good. I think he appeals to what probably the more modern sports fan is these days. Also, I don't know how many people your age, Casey, watch SportsCenter, watch ESPN. So if he's the guy that's going to relate to more of your generation, then that's a great move for him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does great stuff on game day. I was never a big Corso guy. Just personally, even when he was younger and not, you know, lost his marbles.
Yeah, the losing the marbles, that's when I started to lean off of College Game Day. But I think they revitalized it in a way that, again, is super digestible in ways it hadn't been in the past.
I think what I'm more curious about this when it comes to Pat McAfee doing Monday Night Football stuff is more of just what's the future of Pat McAfee? Like, will we get a burnout point of him? Yeah, probably. But what's the backslide of the burnout on Pat McAfee? Because we're seeing the backslide on the burnout of Stephen A.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the backside burnout of Skip Bayless, you know, people like that. And I to put McAfee in those same categories, I don't know if that's fair. Those guys are like journalists who became yellers, who became talking heads, to where Pat McAfee's always been like, yo, dude, I just say what I want. I'm a punter from West Virginia and played in the NFL with Peyton Manning. I'm a nobody. I just yell and take my shirt off.
But I think that's why people like Pat McAfee for it. Because, again, Stephen A. can get exhausting to a point where you're like, well, why do I need to listen to this guy? I saw him try to do that boxing video. I can just turn that off. I know this guy's not the greatest athlete. And I hate that. But I also understand where people come from when they do those things.
Yeah, and McAfee, look, we all knew somebody like Pat McAfee. If we are not the Pat McAfee, we knew somebody like that, especially in college sports,
mm-hmm.
whether it was on campus or your buddy's watching the Duck game on Saturday at the bar. You know, we all know a Pat McAfee. He's just been really, really good about it. But I am curious, like, he's making $65 million a year. Like,
I also think that he's surrounded himself with a really good team. Like, I think that the fact that the guys on his show have been able to build brands around him, I think that contributes to how impactful he has been, not only as just a journalist, but as a leader in his own locker room, for what you want to say.
And something I do get from Pat McAfee, look, they all have egos in this business. You know, you kind of have to if you want to get to where you want to be. But that's the difference between him, I think, and then a lot of the other guys. He knows he's kind of a goof. He knows he's kind of a goober.
And he digs into that, and I think that's what makes him lovable.
Dude, he loves wrestling. Like, for the longest time, when I was younger, wrestling was huge, right? And then probably the mid to late 2000s, early 2010s, it was like, you're an adult and you watch wrestling? Bro, mm-hmm. get a life. And wrestling's made a huge comeback. And I've never shamed anybody for liking wrestling. I don't care, man. Watch whatever the hell you want. I don't care. As long as you're not making me watch something, then I don't care. So for him to do a part of that, yeah, it kind of leans into it, makes him feel a little more everyday, man, a little more relatable. To where some of those other dudes, they just always feel like they're better than you and they know better than you, you know. You don't know ball kind of thing. Like, I hate that sort of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And McAfee is just like, look, man, you want to get drunk and watch some football? That sounds dope.
I just think that his show makes it seem like they're open to all the conversations about topics, that they're not steadfast about it being necessarily one ideological idea about what this sport should or should not be. I just like that everything that the conversations that they have are leave it up to interpretation and let's just try to better the game.
This is an article by Andrew Marchand in The Athletic. There's some interesting little tidbits in here. If the alt casts go through, McAfee could be on ESPN or ESPN2 for nearly 7 hours some Mondays during the season. That's the danger when you sign that big old contract.
That's a lot of time.
They're going to put you on wherever they want. Now, another interesting kind of tick in this, the league requires approval for all alt casts. In some cases, it just approves, while the NFL can also ask for an added fee. ESPN pays around $2.7 billion a year to the league. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell is said to be a fan of McAfee, evidenced by his appearances on McAfee's program. Now, that's the real question. If ESPN ends up having to pay the NFL to do an alt cast and have McAfee on there, would they still do it? Would they still do it?
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. I don't know if it's worth it. I mean, I don't know what that number would look like.
Yeah, because I
but
just
you're already
it,
paying him a lot of money.
It's also, how do you... You're just trying to recoup your money on the back end.
Yeah.
That just... Okay. All right.
Yeah. This texter. Pat is also being a punter and not thrown down our throats during his playing career helps, too. We all feel like we could be a punter or kicker, in theory, which I think also helps his relatability. It's the truth. Everybody thinks, 35-yard field goal? How'd you miss that? I could do that. I could kick that field goal. That's true.
Now you get guys booting 70-yarders.
I know. What's that guy's name? Cam Little?
Cam Little.
In Jacksonville?
Yeah, kicker for Jacksonville.
He's not even that big.
No. Get Brandon Aubrey. He's a big guy.
McAfee's a big dude.
Mm-hmm. These aren't small humans.
No, but the small humans are actually still doing just as fine. We put this one to bed as maybe it's time to finally call it an end. They're hanging on, but it's time to just adios, muchachos. We'll go there next. 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.